Hey guys, Zach here, reluctant sound editor and general idiot. You'll notice in this episode there's some rough audio. I think especially mine, things were turned up a bit too high. So there's some cracking and clipping and even sound cutting out at some points. Apologies for that. We're definitely trying to improve the overall process here as we learn. Additionally, we said we would keep things a bit shorter for everyone. That has certainly not happened. Everything's under an hour so far, and we're gonna try to keep it like that, but you know, we hope the goofs are flowing and that things are sort of generally enjoyable. So apologies for that, and enjoy this week's episode.
Do you know that feeling when everyone is talking about a movie that you haven't seen? Have you ever felt compelled to make some vague comments just so you can join in the conversation? Well, what if you were in too deep? Do you think you could convince everyone that you'd seen it? Or do you think that your version would be so much better, no one would even care? Here at Faking Movies, we're always the ones who haven't seen the movie.
Anything you can do, I can do better. I can do anything better than you.
Oh, you can.
Yes, I can.
Oh, you can.
Yes, I can.
Oh, you can.
Yes, I can. Yes, I can.
All right, welcome to Faking Movies. We've made it to episode 4. I have a George W. Bush-style mission accomplished banner hanging up behind me because this is the most follow-through I have ever had.
It's really nice.
Yeah, it's beautiful. It's hand-embroidered and everything.
Yep. Are we going to say that now before every episode, that this is the most follow-through that we've ever had?
I mean, why stop now, right? I think, yeah.
The people demand it, Seth.
Yeah, I think all of our many listeners are as excited as we are. I'm pretty sure. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Must be. Yeah.
Well, I'm Lee, joined as always by Zach,
hey,
and Seth.
Hello.
And for episode 4, we're gonna branch out into something slightly different. We're gonna try every other week to bring in a guest to fake a movie, and we wanted for our first guest to bring in our good friend Lucas. Say hi, Lucas.
Oh, hey.
And we wanted to bring in Lucas because he helped us actually develop the idea for the podcast, talking about a party game idea that was basically just building a Frankenstein monster movie out of just random...
Yeah, it was a better idea that you took and then ruined and made a podcast out of.
But, hey,
I mean, that is coming to fruition as we speak, yeah.
Tens of listeners, buddy, so...
Yep.
Got the power of the internet.
That's fair.
But yeah, so we wanted Lucas to come in first, and this week he's going to be doing what I think many consider a classic, Chinatown.
Many.
Well, we've tipped our hands a little there, but...
Sorry. Whoops.
That's on brand. We have not liked a movie yet, I don't think, so...
Well, I think I have not liked a movie.
Yeah, no, I'm pretty much there with you. Yeah.
I mean, how well known is it that you guys like bad movies, though? Like,
that's,
you guys like bad movies.
That's true. Yeah.
I feel like we're really letting that kind of the feeling of us liking bad movies get into the show more than the fact, but... So yeah, Lucas... What information did we give you going into this?
Okay, so you gave me 4 actor names, and that's about it.
And I had 2 of them, correct? 2.5, maybe?
I knew Jack Nicholson.
Yeah.
I did not know John Huston, or Houston, I don't know. I'm assuming it's
You're
Houston.
You're not 70,000 years old, so...
Yeah, I have never even heard of that person.
Correct, yeah.
He is just an empty suit of old guy in my movie here.
You are on point, yes.
Yeah.
All right, sounds about right.
Yeah. Yeah. Faye Dunaway is a name I've heard before.
I assume you're not going to change anything, I will note Faye Dunaway is the one that fucked up the Moonlight La La Land thing this year at the Oscars.
Hey, that was clearly Warren Beatty's fault. He just pinned it on her.
I mean, I'll put anything on Warren Beatty, that's fair. But yeah.
He is a notorious asshole.
That is my... Yeah, that's my pop culture hallmark for Faye Dunaway. Yeah. Anyway, sorry.
I didn't even notice that was her. I probably processed it at the time as old woman.
Yep.
Yeah. She's blonde, right? She's a real generic blonde femme fatale.
Yep, I'd say that's true.
Yeah. And it's directed by and also features Roman Polanski, who I think we all know the one fact I know about him.
Yeah, he lives in France now, I think. Yeah.
Yeah, that's it. He lives in France.
So. Yep.
For totally normal reasons.
Yep. Of Polish descent.
Real Francophile, that one. Yeah. He liked the warm summers.
I additionally know two small tidbits about this movie. Mm-hmm. And I think I disclosed them, and you guys still decided it was okay for me to do this one. I know there's a very famous quote, I think it's at the very end, that's, forget it, Jake, it's Chinatown. I don't know the context for it. I don't know who says it to who, other than I think it's said to Jack Nicholson. I hope so, because I called him Jake the entire time here. And the other thing I know is that he gets his nose broken, or at least injured, and has like a bandage on it the rest of the movie.
It is injured,
and again, I don't know the context, know nothing about it.
Sure.
I also wrote that in.
Cool.
So, yeah, I guess I can get going here. Yeah.
We'll cover those two points at the like movie summary
part. Yeah, they will come up.
They can't not come up, yes.
Oh, they explicitly came up in my version.
Oh, fantastic.
Right. Yeah.
Plot points.
Yeah. So, you know, the movie's set in Chinatown of Nameless City. Who cares? Presumably New York. You know, I decided that Jack Nicholson plays Jake. He's a private eye. He's, you know, as a private eye with debts, he's... Well, I spoiled something already. shoot. No, so he's slightly unscrupulous about, you know, schemes and making money how he can. You know, because private eye doesn't always pay all of the bills. So the movie starts in his office. You know, there's probably an exterior shot of, you know, the busyness, the noise, and all the people in Chinatown. It's a drizzly night. There's neon signs blaring. Like,
so it looks like the beginning of Blade Runner.
Exactly what I was going to say.
This is a
classic
Hollywood setup right now.
Oh, God, let's hope you just wrote Blade Runner. That would be
I've What's seen Blade Runner? Runner so I, yeah. Yeah. So... Basically, the first real scene is Faye Dunaway, who I'm going to refer to all these actors and actresses just by their first name.
Yeah, that's fine.
For sure.
I could not be bothered to come up with character names. You guys, I actually have two really important characters that are in more of the movie than a couple of these people. We'll get to that. So Faye comes into Jake's office, and you know it's the super cliched, you know, femme fatale noir. Basically, I wrote a super just pulpy noir movie.
Yeah, what time period are you setting this in?
So my understanding is it came out in the 60s or 70s. I don't know when, like, quote-unquote noir would have been, but like 30s, 40s maybe? Like Casablanca, I think, was World War II-ish.
Yeah.
So that's an interesting point. I will not give it away, but I watched this movie thinking it was a time period and then looked it up, like, two-thirds of the way through, and it was very much not that time period.
I am so curious what the two time periods were.
Yeah, I can't wait. Confused. Let's put a pin in this one, Zach, because I need to know.
Yeah, for sure. Yep.
And actually, I was thinking of it as present to when the movie came out before you asked me that, and I was like, wait, was that a thing?
Anyway. Oh, yeah, whoops. Me too. All right, go on.
No, that's fine. Zach definitely had the dumber version of whatever that thought was.
Almost always, yeah.
Yeah, so she comes in and she has a job for him, obviously. She's real vague and cagey about it, obviously. The job has something to do with her husband, her dead husband. And it was he had a business deal that he was going to do with this guy who is very important. And his name is what? Somebody. Give me a name.
Gary?
His name is Gary. So Gary is this...
Barry Gary. Busey.
Played by Gary Busey. Yep.
Yeah,
there we go.
Yeah. So
played
Gary
by
was,
Jake Busey.
Was Faye's husband's former business partner. And she really wants to complete this business deal that they were going to do together so she can get the money. The idea was that the two of them were going to steal this really expensive MacGuffin.
A Maltese Falcon or something?
Yeah, pretty much. Ooh, yeah. No. Nice. That was what I spent the most time on trying to decide what the thing was when I literally, it's just a MacGuffin.
Yeah, that I feel works. Like that's a natural way to go.
Yeah. Yeah. So I actually decided it was a jade dragon statue.
Mm. That's
from very
a thing?
Fitting.
Yeah. Is that a thing in another movie? Or is that just
it's
like
a probably an
thing?
Amalgamation of like six things.
Okay.
Yeah, I think it's in a lot of different movies or TV shows or things like that. There's always a jade dragon somewhere.
Yeah. I think I got the Jade portion from Jade Scorpion.
The Woody Allen movie?
Yeah, I don't know.
The Mortal Kombat 1 characters? That's pretty cool. I'm into
that. Like I said, MacGuffin, let's move past
it. All right.
Mortal Kombat!
So...
rest of the episode.
Yeah, no, can we just talk about Mortal Kombat instead? I have seen it, but it's been a while. We can make that up.
That's a tough one to not know about. Mm-hmm. Combat.
People
right
fight, and sometimes they die.
Mortal Kombat, the romantic comedy. Well,
I'd watch it.
I for sure would watch it. Yeah.
So they're trying to
tell them about this.
They're trying to steal the MacGuffin.
Yeah. 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 The thing is to steal the MacGuffin. She doesn't really have any helpful leads at all. She basically just has this name, Gary. And then she leaves and he goes downstairs. Where he goes to is a bar, the bar that's below his office. And who owns and runs this bar but John Huston, obviously, because he's an old guy. I don't
and
know.
Old guys run bars.
Mm-hmm. Old guys run bars in 60s movies.
He's a sack of flesh behind the bar.
Yeah. Yep. And when he's a friend and confidant to Jake, and he also knows about all the shady dealings around town.
So he's an exposition bag of flesh.
Yeah, pretty much, yeah.
Cool. Okay.
Yeah. Jake talks to him for a bit and tells him about this job and this guy's name and say, hey, do you know this guy? Do you know anything about him? And he doesn't really get anything from him, but there's a creepy, like, slimy patron down the end of the bar who overhears the name, and he gets Jake's attention, and he's like, hey, I know that guy. So he tells him that Gary likes to hang out at this real specific... By the way, cut into myself here. This may or may not get a little bit racist. I'm going to try not to, but...
It was the 60s or 70s, as you noted.
It's a period piece called Chinatown with white people in it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's my thing.
Again, not to spoil stuff, but I got some quotes for you. Ooh.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, me too. Yeah.
Okay, I won't feel so bad about it.
It's
going
to be fun.
Yeah.
It's not going to be fun. It's quite a
fun. So Gary's local haunt is a noodle restaurant.
Noodles Jake are is very going racist. You're right, yeah.
I was like, what settings would there be in a movie called Chinatown? So Jake is curious. He wants to know why this random stranger is telling him all this stuff. And he tells Jake that he's tried to work with Gary before and he got burned. And Gary took off with both halves of the money or whatever the plan was at the time. And then he warns Jake that he should be careful and if he's going to mess with this Gary character. So... Jake goes to the restaurant to look for this Gary guy, and he orders food, and he sits at the counter, and Gary comes out of the back hallway, and Jake jumps up with a start and starts to chase him. And so this is sort of the climax of the first act, is this chase that goes through the back of the restaurant, through the kitchen, through the alleys, onto the main road, there's big crowds, and then Gary escapes up a fire escape, and Jake can't catch him. But Gary drops this slip of paper from his pocket that Jake catches. And he looks at it, and it's a credit slip for a local mahjong parlor, second
Ooh,
racist
mahjong.
Setting.
Yeah.
Are these racist or just, like, kind of real? I don't know.
I don't know.
They might just be locations that you could find in a Chinatown. Yeah. But I'm not sure.
That's fair.
Also,
I would
note, so Gary, sack of flesh, old man, let's say almost...
No, that's two different people, friend.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Never mind. Mm-hmm. I was going to go on a tirade about how hard it is to climb ladders, having done that recently.
As an old guy?
as a me guy. But yeah, all right. Never mind. Damn it.
No.
That was really going to be good. But, okay, go.
Just to reiterate, Gary is... Faye's husband's former business partner.
Oh, sure.
Who's basically, he's the human MacGuffin at this point.
Got it.
He's the MacGuffin proxy.
Off of Gary Cooper.
Oh, okay.
Uh-huh. Yep, must be.
Sure. So this credit slip for Mahjong is the next lead that he has. So he goes to the Mahjong parlor and he uses that credit slip to join a game. And so he's playing the game and this older Asian guy comes over. He presumably has some connection to the place. He owns the place, something. So he comes over and he sits down and joins the game and starts talking to him. And the reason he does this is that he recognized Paul's credit slip. And he goes, hey, what is this other white guy doing with this other white guy's credit slip? Why is he here? What's he looking for?
So you're going reverse racism here. All Asian dudes are like, oh no, what? Maybe that's not reverse racism.
He's a respectable business owner, yeah, maybe.
Okay. I'm getting into rough territory here. I'm just going
to
stop talking.
Yeah, yeah. I think you need to pump the brakes a little, Zach.
We're going to have to start over entirely. Yeah. Anyway, so he's sort of grilling Jake, and he wants to know what he knows and what he's looking for. And in doing so, he also goes off on a tangent, as, you know, exposition-y characters tend to do. He goes off and tells him about the legend of the Jade Dragon, which, if I wasn't talking about the plot, this would be the first reference to it. You wouldn't know that this was the MacGuffin yet. I sort of said that it was, but that's fine. So he tells him about this, and it's pretty just coincidental. It has nothing to do with, you know, that's what Jake's looking for. There's some meaning in it, because that's how symbolism works, or whatever. Yeah, so he tells him that, and then he kind of just implies that Jake needs to drop whatever he's doing and just walk away from it. So, with no real leads to go on at that point, he just goes back to his office. Now, we're sort of into Act 2 already here, but what he finds when he gets back to his office is Roman Polanski sitting in his chair, flanked by two big, like,
henchmen. Children. Women children.
Ugh. I was going to say, that is literally yes. Every human's worst nightmare. Yeah.
Yeah, I was
going to
say.
Hide your daughters.
No, they're his goons, his henchmen. Yeah. So they have a conversation, and this reveals Jake's gambling debts. He owes Roman a bunch of money because he's a bookie. Mm. And so, you know, he does the really, you know, veiled threats and smiles at him and says, oh, this is going to be a problem. You know, we can't really have that, blah, blah, blah.
Hold on. Can you go back and do that in like a weird Polish/French accent?
A French-Polish accent,
I can't and I won't. Okay. You can take a stab at it if you'd like.
I'll put it in post. That's fine. Cool.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So, you know, Jack Nicholson, being the sort of wisecracking guy that he is, he gets real flippant about it. He's like, yeah, it'll be fine. I'm not really worried. And at that point, one of the goons breaks his nose to, you know, show how serious he is.
Okay.
You know, and he says Jake has until the end of the week to have his money that he owes him. And what this does is this gives Jake, you know, more incentive to really follow up this case and try to get paid so he can pay off his debts. So after he gets his nose broken, he decides to drink a bunch of whiskey and falls asleep in his office. And that's not in there for much of a reason, other than I think it would be funny for him to be hungover the rest of the movie.
I mean, that's kind of noir, right? Like, sort of, maybe?
Yeah. I was going to say, I think so far you've been making a pretty tight noir movie.
Yeah.
Oh, thanks.
Yeah, it's... I'm digging it so far.
I mean, that's...
There's, like, very specific tropes and, like, themes in noir, right?
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah, I think it's on point. Yeah,
that's
sure.
That's all I did is I painted a, you know, blank noir canvas with Jack Nicholson and two plot points I knew.
So wait, then the movie's over? Oh no, we have to.
Yeah,
have
no,
to
this is like it's like 45 minutes long and has two scenes.
Oh well, again, spoilers, but
Okay, so where was I? So he wakes up the next day. He confronts Faye because this woman's clearly not telling him enough about this deal. You know, he wants to know how the Mahjong parlor plays in. He wants to know, you know, what she's really looking to get out of it. And she comes clean, sort of. This is the point that she actually tells him that it's a plan to steal this valuable statue that's, you know, the Jade Dragon. And that it's set to be imported by the Triad this week. And Paul was my placeholder name. Gary works on the docks.
Yeah, Gary Cooper.
Yeah, Gary Cooper works on the docks. And he knew which container the Jade Dragon would be in, and he was going to steal it and have Faye's husband, who we didn't give a name to, but that he doesn't matter, he's dead.
He was going
to give it to Larry, and then Larry was going to fence it, and they were going to split the profits 50-50.
Oh, fence is a good word. I just recently learned about the word fence. It's nice.
Anyway. What, do you not, you know, steal things?
Not typically, no. It's just, it's elegant. Anyway. Go on.
Okay. So.
Okay.
Faye also reveals that she thinks Gary killed her husband so he wouldn't have to share the pay.
So Gary killed Larry?
Yes, that's that's what Faye thinks, yeah.
Some ARY on ARY violence? Oh, God.
So
oh, you Jake gotta has... have a Cockney guy in the movie. You go, it's getting awful airy in here.
Not bad.
He probably. This next character is that guy. How about that?
Oh, great.
Andrew Bradley. Yeah. Oh, here we go.
No. So having a lead again, he goes to investigate the docks, you know, and he tries to talk to some dock workers, and one of them tells him about Gary's, you know, he has been sort of keeping an eye on Gary, and he knows what the score is, and he knows that Gary's going to steal the statue, and it's going to be that night, and which container it's going to be in. And again, you're wondering, why is this stranger telling him all this stuff? And he has pretty much the same vendetta. You know, I tried to work with this guy. He was a dick. He fucked me over. And so fuck him. So then there's a giant hole that would be like the end of Act 2 and half of Act 3 because I don't know, got tired.
This is on brand for all of the plot synopses thus far. Yes. Just skip so wild basic chunks. Yeah.
Yeah, we're gonna jump to the climax at this point.
Yeah, the ending is the most important part of these anyway.
Yep.
Yeah, yeah. So I actually have a scene I have a scene where Jake meets up with Faye again in John's bar, John Houston's bar. And really that's just because we haven't seen him in like an hour and a half. he's apparently one of the top four billed people, and I had him in a scene so far. So we have to get him back in the mix. But while they're in the bar, he tells her the plan. He's going to follow Gary from the dock to the meetup with the buyer. He's going to kill Gary, and he's going to sell the statue and split the profits with Faye. Mm. Now, this gets Faye her fair cut, and it also can get Jake out of debt. Mm-hmm. So that's the plan. He goes to enact this plan. He goes to the docks. He sees Gary breaking into one of the containers. He sees him come back out holding something in his jacket, and he follows him. And there's sort of a tense, like, not a chase, but like a following scene, stalking down the streets. And it ends up at the art museum where the buy is going to take place. And, you know, you got to love a scene that takes place in an art museum after it's closed and it's all dark and shadowy and there's just expensive shit around. So if gunplay starts happening, it'll be really exciting.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Just shatter everything.
Yeah. So he gets there and Gary's standing, like, you know, in the open. And he's like, he looks nervous, and he's waiting for the buyer. And he thinks the buyer's going to be that old Asian guy from the Mahjong parlor. But it's, well, he thinks it's going to be that guy. And apparently I jumped halfway into another sentence. But anyway, Jake steps out from the shadows and just shoots him in the head.
Ooh, oh, Jesus.
And,
all right.
Yeah, no, and then Gary's dead. He's done.
We're going full heat on this one. Love it.
Great. Yeah, sure are.
Yeah. So he steps forward to like get the dragon, and just as he does, Faye steps out of the shadows right behind him and points a gun at him. And then big exposition drop about how Faye, her husband wasn't really her husband. He was some guy that she killed to try to get this dragon.
Ooh, okay.
And this is the rest of her plan. Mm-hmm. So she killed him as part of this plan. And then she tells Jake to drop the gun and hand over the dragon. And he does, cause he doesn't. I don't know if he forgets how to shoot his gun or something.
Yeah. That's also a noir trope.
Yeah,
he needed to not have the gun at that moment, so that's why he dropped it.
Yeah, there's some hand-waving happening there. Yeah. But she gets done with her exposition, like revealing her whole plan, and the buyer steps out of the shadow. And this is where the point where it would be mentioned that you think it's the old Asian guy, but it's not. It's Roman.
Oh.
And he's got a gun. But he's hot.
Okay.
Yeah. He's a real slippery one, that guy. Yeah.
Yeah. and we'll have to come back to this in a minute because I'll explain why it was Roman and it doesn't make any sense. But anyway.
That's another noir trope, honestly.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, Faye swings her gun around and points it at him and he raises his hands like, I don't have a weapon. Don't shoot. Because, you know, he's probably got a gun, but it's like he's not holding it. It's in his back pocket or whatever. And she kind of goes, hey, you know, you're going to let me leave and you're going to let me take this dragon. And he's like, okay. So he leaves. Faye runs away and Jake goes to follow her, but he's stopped by one of Roman's bodyguards. And this is actually like the end of the movie. And Roman just says to Jake, forget it, Jake. It's Chinatown. And then the movie ends.
Ooh, not bad.
Yeah, that's
not a good. So the having to try to give that line context, the idea is you won't be able to catch her. It's too crowded. You know, she's already in the wind. And it also implies an unfortunate fate for Jake because he didn't make the money he needed to pay Roman. Mm. And Roman now knows this, so he gonna get killed.
Yeah.
But that happens like after Cut to Black.
Yep, sure.
So that's my plot to Chinatown.
Not bad. Yeah, not bad.
That was a nice tight 90, honestly. And, yeah. And, well, yeah.
Unlike like Chinatown.
Well, it's Chinatown is a very soul crushing 1:30. So.
Yeah.
No, it's 1:41.
Didn't you tell me it was like just over 2 hours?
I thought it was just slightly over 2 hours.
Yeah, so oh, did see. I was. Yeah,
felt like you a lied lifetime. To me, I see. Let's be honest. Yeah.
I see.
Does anyone have the IMDb quick synopsis pulled up?
Oh, I can.
Yeah, I
can,
got it.
Oh, you got it. Go for it.
Yeah, of course I do. Chinatown, 1974. A private detective hired to expose an adulterer finds himself caught up in a web of deceit, corruption, and murder.
Adultery would have been a good way to go with that. I was.
Yeah, that's also a noir trope. Casual racism, adultery.
Yeah, I don't know why I couldn't think of that. I just decided her husband was dead and that something was valuable. Yeah.
Well, good news.
Her husband does die.
Well, there you go.
Yep.
All right, how do we want to go through this? Oh, man, I really did not like this movie, but how do we want to get through it?
I can throw, like, a few bullet points. It's set in the 30s in L.A. So, okay. Zach, when did you think it was set?
Literally 45 minutes, and I'm like, honestly, what tipped me off was the cars, of course. I'm like, not the clothing or the anything else. I saw, like, everybody's driving these weird-ass old cars. That's interesting. And then I looked it up and I was like, oh, set in like 1935. Yeah. Cool.
No, it's like Blade Runner. Everybody's driving these weird ass cars.
I genuinely thought it was set in present day, like 1975. Yeah.
No. Yeah, a minute ago when you said 45, I was like, you 45 minutes before the script was written? Yeah, that's when it was set.
I mean, again, well, not to jump on this point, but like, it did the heat thing that Heat did in the middle where it was real boring, but it did that most of the movie, I would say. So,
it was like,
it
was like an hour or like a 2 hour civics lesson.
Yeah. Yep. Oh. I bet civil engineers love this movie. Yeah.
It's water management in LA is basically the center of this entire
story. There's a lot of shady land and water dealings.
To be fair, is a super boring thing to base like the entire plot of a movie off of. Like, super weird.
Who are you being fair to there?
Everyone. Yeah, I idioms, I guess.
I mean, like, one of the first scenes, they're just, like, describing water management for 10 minutes in a lecture hall, and then a bunch of sheep come in.
Yep.
What?
Yeah, actually, yeah, weird. Like, the first scene of the movie is in a courtroom, and then a bunch of sheep show up. And I was like, whoa, this is weird. And then, like, an hour of boring nothingness happened. So.
Oh, there was a sorcerer there, too, if you could tell, because he had, like, a ram horn on a staff.
Of course, yeah.
That was a shepherd. It was actually a shepherd.
I'm pretty sure that was a shaman, actually.
In movies like this, you have to invent your own fun. It's true.
But yeah, how many teeth and or ears were around his neck?
Oh,
that's how you know if it's a shaman. More than zero.
Yeah, that would have been
well, nice. it was Rance Howard, Ron Howard's dad, so.
Fancy.
There was
the
some evil brewing in there, I guess. I don't know. Huh. Yeah.
Well, he fostered a bunch of ginger children, so there's at least a minimal amount of evil in there. Yeah,
there we go.
Boy, let's get to that offensive part right now, shall we?
It's shady land and water dealings, adultery. John Huston plays like the old man business partner of the dead husband of what's her name's character.
Faye
Dunaway's character.
That's why Zach thought. The husband spends the first, like, I don't know, half an hour of this movie just wandering around various dams and spillways and looking at starfish.
Yep.
That is a big scene. He's just standing there looking at a starfish for a while.
It reads a lot like your average Wednesday of like a civics worker job. Yeah. It's bafflingly boring. Yeah, as soon as I figured out that this movie is about, like, so that's the sort of, like, subplot line is someone is keeping water. There's a drought, and someone's keeping water from L.A. and blah, blah, blah. And that's what
leads... So they could buy up all the property. Yeah.
And that's what leads Jack Nicholson down this path of figuring out adultery and murder and all that shit. But, like, yeah, but they really lean into that. Like, that should have been, like, a one-minute exposition that's just, like, water, done. And it was, like, an hour. It was weird.
At least.
And then, guys...
Yeah,
and then
I'll let you take this one. Go
yeah,
for it.
Yeah, this is all you, Lee. Go ahead.
We all know where you're going.
So, there's a very important incest plot line to the whole movie.
Oh, no.
Yeah, so...
Mm-hmm. It's gross.
Yeah, and there's a... And I'll throw it back to Zach here in a second, because he had just the most incredible quote about this scene.
I did?
Probably. There's a scene where Jack Nicholson, Jake, you were right there, is just slapping the ever-loving hell out of Faye Dunaway, trying to find out who this woman is, because it's like, you said it was your sister. So he slaps her. She goes, my sister. And he slaps her again. My daughter. My sister. My daughter. And he starts shaking her, and she says, she's my sister and my daughter.
Yeah.
And Zach, do you remember what you said about that scene?
Not entirely, but I have something written down. Let's see how close it is. Go for it.
Okay. What you said to me was... Now, he sure looks like a man who's used to beating a woman.
That's exactly what I have written down, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. He really, like, there's like, movie violence where you can kind of tell they're letting up on him. He gave that woman the business. Like, he was really getting at her. And I was like, this is uncomfortable, even for the 70s and for Jack Nicholson.
Yeah. I mean, this whole movie was so, well, woman-hating.
Speaking of which, we've made it to that point in the episode. I looked up.
Oh, sure, yeah. So let's not get super dark with this. But...
Well, no, I mean, we'll get back to it. But I looked up the Bechdel test. It says it passed 2 out of 3, which I assume is at least 2 named women, which definitely that. Well, maybe that. Got to be that.
Yeah, Catherine and.
Oh,
Faye
yeah,
Donald.
Daughter and sister, yeah. Mother, whatever. Yeah.
So does that imply they talk to each other, but only about a man?
So what I'm reading here is they apparently talk to each other, but the conversation is like in the background, so you can't tell what it's about. Yeah,
that's true.
So yeah, we'll never know. But let's say it's fair to say it's. I mean, even if it passes the Bechdel test, it's a goddamn nightmare for women.
Oh. So, I mean, the part that, and again, I don't want to get too dark with this, the part that I find most disturbing about this is it's about, like, the father rapes the daughter.
Yep. Unapologetically.
Yeah. And this is 3 years before Roman Polanski.
Yeah.
Oh,
the
no.
Yep.
Right? So, like...
This was actually the last film he filmed in the U.S.
Mm. Yeah, it just seems like it was indicating certain behaviors, perhaps, that maybe somebody should have caught
this
on to.
This is a weird cry for not help, maybe? Yeah. Something terrible.
It just, like, skis me out real, real bad. Like...
Well, and then
everything
and,
about Roman Polanski, I hate that guy. He's awful.
And then when you fast forward to the end of the movie, and you did get that right, Lucas. The last line is "Forget it, Jake. It's Chinatown."
Yeah.
But it's one of Jack Nicholson's like assistants who says it to him, because he just witnessed Faye Dunaway try to escape with her sister daughter and basically just get shot the whole fuck up
right in the head,
and then
right in the head.
Yeah, and then John Huston just. Takes her and like just wraps his arms around her and like angel of deaths her away, and like he's gonna leave now and get away with everything.
Yep. The incest plot, so John Huston is like a true monster, but they made no point to make him at all apologetic about it. Like,
yeah,
once everybody figures it out, Jack goes and confronts him, and he's just like, oh I mean what do you know, it happened.
Wait, did he play Faye Dunaway's dad?
Yeah.
And
oh yeah, we forgot to cover that point.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, it's rough.
Yeah.
But yeah, so yeah, your thing was like Chinatown is busy, which is like an admirable 2017 version of like, oh, what's wrong with Chinatown? Their version of Chinatown is like, what a shithole. Like, oh, people do incest and get murdered and, yeah, you know, it's Chinatown.
It's fine.
I also really want to point out, for a movie called Chinatown, there are two billed Asian actors in the movie.
Yeah.
I assumed that was going to be the case.
Yeah. And almost none of it takes place in Chinatown.
Well, the last scene takes place in Chinatown.
Yeah.
It does. But yeah, it was a weird... I mean, I guess you gotta name a movie something, right? But yeah, like, it has very little to do with it. They could have named it, like, Guy Steals Water or something, yeah.
Or The Spillway.
Sure. Or Sister, Daughter, whatever. Like, yeah, any of it.
Well, maybe not that one. It kind of spoils it.
Yeah, that ruins the twist, I guess, but...
I was gonna say, was that a like supposed to be a gratifying twist? Like, oh my god!
I don't think anything.
Or is that just like, oh, that's really upsetting?
If it was a reveal, it was subtle. Like they didn't make a big deal out of it. I don't think, or I didn't feel
that particularly. Yeah. Back on the Asian actors, the thing that I really noticed about them is neither of them had like accents. The Asian actors had to like. Put on an affect of sounding racist.
Oh, but well, I mean that happened up into the 90s, though, right? Like,
yeah, it was just upset.
Yeah, no, I mean it doesn't excuse it by any means. So I have 2 points. To this. Mm-hmm. So one of the punchlines that I had to go back because again I was only like half paying attention, but like the punchline that I heard and then literally had to rewind the movie was. You're screwing just like a Chinaman, and then uproarious laughter. And I was like, hang on a second. And had to go back. I still don't remember what the actual joke was, but I was like, wow, that's a thing we're really just going to lean into in this. Okay.
Yeah, it's like a barber shop, and they were having a good old boy upsetting conversation.
Yep.
And
one of the only laughs in this movie at all. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Upset.
You say laugh.
Well, the characters laugh. I mean,
it laughing. It's a little different.
It's a personal choice. Yeah. You can or can't, I guess. It's up to you. But...
I thought it was weird that you were like, yeah, the one punchline. I'm like, punchlines? There are punchlines in this? That doesn't sound right.
It's like guys drinking and, hanging out at a barbershop, the other one was they do, so much like that final line that we are referencing, there's lots of allusions to Chinatown just being this, like, understandable shithole. Like,
yeah, they just...
You just say Chinatown, and people go, oh, okay.
Oh, yeah, Chinatown, that
and
place.
So, like, I guess, I mean, culturally, maybe that was, like, super a thing back then. But, like, I wrote down, like, they, again, like, that woman just got literally shot in the head by people and, like, crashed her car and, like, lots of horrible shit happened. And then the final line is just like, meh, whatever, Chinatown. They'll just, meh.
So, yeah. Someone will take care of it,
right.
Yeah.
It's pretty
upsetting.
So
what was like the narrative? What was the narrative impetus to make parts of it in Chinatown? Like
so unclear.
Yeah.
So I mean,
I don't understand why Chinatown had to be involved at all.
At the end, when Faye Dunaway's trying to escape, it's like, oh, go to your butler's house in Chinatown, and we'll like smuggle you out of the country from there.
Yeah, but they had been referencing Chinatown the entire movie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, they kept saying it like it was a thing we were supposed to understand.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, if there's one thing that was, like, really great about, you know, the past was people really agreeing how much, you know, other people were bad, like, you know, people of different races and, and genders and whatnot.
Absolutely.
There's there's this great scene at a nursing home where they're like, do you accept people of the Jewish faith? And they're like, of course we don't. And he's like, and Jack Nicholson is like, that's exactly what I wanted to hear. Finger guns.
Yes, next scene.
Right, but the thing about that is I'm pretty sure one of the old ladies in that nursing home was Golda Meir.
Ooh.
He looked exactly like Golda Meir. And she infiltrated those racist nursing home people.
And...
I'm so funny.
If not, I like this rewrite.
I'm trying to jump on with a joke, but it's just too good.
So I had one. Like I said, I had two other points. One is, so You wrote Roman Polanski into the movie more than he was actually in the movie.
Oh yeah, he was in like two scenes.
A misdirect on your part, wasn't it?
No, he's highly billed.
Really,
5 or 6 or something. He's up there for sure. But I mean, I think mostly
he does play a goon in the movie. Like he's the one, and he cuts Jack Nicholson's nose. He doesn't break it.
Right. So he jams a knife up and then like pulls out, which is like weirdly violent. Yeah.
No, oh, yeah.
But then the thing that I noticed was like, what? So that happens, I don't know, 30, 45 minutes in. And then Jack Nicholson wears this like very obvious bandage for almost the entirety of the movie past that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I was like, that it's so distracting. It's such a weird choice to do that. Like, I was wondering if, like, honestly, he had broken his nose in real life and, like, they wrote that in afterwards or something. Like,
oh. So like a Mark Hamill situation, like in between
Empire.
The original Star
car
Wars
accident.
And Empire.
Yeah, yeah.
He had the car accident and he got all those scars. That's why they had to have the wampa.
That's exactly what I'm thinking. Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. And I didn't look it up, so but I assume that's not true, but like it was so
I did look it up actually.
Oh, okay.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
We're on the same page, I guess.
So he didn't actually have a broken nose. They had a prop knife that was apparently incredibly difficult to use, where it looked like a real knife.
Oh.
And if you used it at the right angle, it would perfectly fake slicing open someone's nose. But if you messed it up, it sliced open someone's nose.
It's as safe as a real knife. They could have just used a real knife.
Yeah. Well, and I guess the prop master spent so much time explaining how this thing worked to people that eventually he just got annoyed and then said, oh yeah, we just cut his nose open. So that might be where that idea started.
Okay. I mean, when they, Faye, I think, takes the bandage off at the end of the movie and it looks pretty gnarly. Like, it's not great.
Yeah. All kinds of fucked up.
Like, every scene he's in, he has this bandage that's, like, covering half of his eye, and it's, like, it takes up most of his face. I'm like, what the fuck is going on? Like, it's so stupid looking. I don't know.
By the way, I'm sad that I, like, 5 minutes ago, I didn't get in when you guys said, you know, it's just like that Star Wars. I'm like, yeah, when Mark Hamill got his hand cut off.
That also happened. Correct.
Zach, can we so move good. That around in post? Because I like that.
Oh, I'll give it a shot.
Get that in there.
I'll see you try.
There's like 2 or 3 things that are just weird that I wanted to just mention.
Sure.
First up, you know when they're having a romantic in Echo Park rowboat across that while Jack Nicholson is trying to spy?
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure that his like partner or whatever that is, his henchman, is Steve Zahn.
Yeah.
Like Steve Zahn might be like one of these immortal beings. Like Keanu Reeves is immortal. We all know that.
I've seen the pictures
from
the Civil War.
I'm familiar with that, yes. Yeah.
I'm pretty sure Steve Zahn just puts on a little more weight or takes weight off, but he is also a high.
Oh shit, man.
Lexington, Kentucky's own Steve Zahn.
If we had to pick one dude to be immortal, like I'm pretty okay with Steve Zahn. Like that's
I feel like he
reasonable.
Would be true of heart. Yeah, yeah. I think so.
Well, Sahara was a misstep, but Saving Silverman. Woo!
Ooh.
Well,
that's true.
All-time classic.
I thought your point was he doesn't make enough of an impact that you wouldn't notice that he's there.
Flies under the radar as a famous movie star.
Yeah.
he was in that what was the goddamn
Rescue Don?
No, O'Neaters, the Tom Hanks one.
Oh, yeah.
That thing you do. Yeah. He did that and then Tom Hanks, the space lord, was like, "Hey man, fucking dial it down. Like you're flying too close to the sun here."
Okay, next thing on my list, the assistant director of the water company or whatever was Howard, the character named Howard Johnson in Blazing Saddles.
Ojo!
Which
it's the same actor.
Yeah, I assume. Huh. I don't know. It's just a white guy that looks the same. What was up with that horse kid? There's like...
Oh, yeah. You mean the peyote trip? I can only assume it's a peyote trip.
I was like, hey, Atreyu, what's going on, friend?
That sounds like it was edited in from Eraserhead, if there was a horse movie.
No, it was a kid with a horse. Perhaps not a horse.
But it was equally inexplicable. Yeah.
not a weird like horse-headed fetus with like
no,
flies
just like a. I think Native American.
That's too
Native
bad.
Native American kid on a horse that like talks about water, clearly like a drug trip. But like they didn't flesh it out enough for it to make sense. It was just like a throwaway.
Well, he talks to the husband whose name I can't recall, sure. And then he also talks
Larry.
To Larry. he also talks to Jack Nicholson.
Yeah,
he talks to both of them, and it still is inexplicable.
'70s. It's supposed to be artsy, you know.
All right. Two more things. There's like a section that is just literally 10 minutes of watching a guy do clerical work.
Yep.
Like public records clerical work is just like 10 minutes of this movie. And that's just one of the many clerical scenes.
And it was the most palatable scene.
It kind of was.
It's top five, yeah.
My last point is... the name of one of the dead guys, like in the obituaries, his name was Jasper Lamar Crabb. And I was like, that is a solid name.
Wow. I think he probably went on IMDb and that was like one of his four credits and he just edited that in. He's like, nah, I'm just gonna, go big or go home.
Wow. Someone in the prop department either put in a lot of effort or no effort when they were making that obituary.
Also, this movie takes place in, like, 2 days.
Yeah. A lot of shit goes down in, like, 2 days.
It seems like an eternity.
Yep.
So I had, like, one or two things.
Yeah.
Well, I guess because I wasn't sure how much you guys hated it, I came with a slightly, a not actively negative thing first.
Mine weren't negative. They were just weird.
Yeah, I was saying. Yeah. No, I mean, I remembered thinking this movie was pretty good, but no, it was a fucking chore. But it's one of, it's probably, and this might be because it's not from the traditional film noir period, it's from the 70s, and they're filming in color, not black and white, but I don't remember a film noir movie that takes place so much during the day as this one.
Yeah,
which
sure.
I think is just still interesting. You know, play with the style of the movie.
Yep.
But the thing I really want to talk about is there's a sequel to Chinatown.
Yep.
What?
Yep.
It's called The Two Jakes, and it was...
Oh, I think I've heard of that.
Yeah, it's directed
I don't know anything
Jack
about it
Nicholson.
Other than The Two Jakes.
I don't want to live on this planet anymore.
I spent about as much time watching this movie as I did researching this nightmare. Go on.
This might make you feel better, Seth.
It doesn't have Jack Nicholson in it, right?
No, it does.
Yeah,
he directed it.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, wow.
It was, like, weirdly, like, 15, 18 years later, I think, right?
Mm-hmm. It takes place in the 60s, and it was shot in 1990.
Yeah.
okay. So, and this movie, if this makes you feel any better, Seth, grossed at the box office about half what it cost to make. And it did not cost a lot of money to make.
Noir is like intentionally cheap, right? You just get like some garbage camera and you're like, let's just go to a road and do the thing.
Yeah, I mean, back in the day when they were doing it because they didn't have any money, sure.
Yeah.
But
there aren't enough noir movies with just like high concept CG.
I mean, does Sin City count? I don't know.
Yeah, Lucas.
I went back and I edited a bunch of Dewback lizards into Out of Cast. I think it really adds to the
Luke
film.
I put Luke Skywalker in the background.
but I think even more, what I love even more than the fact that there's a shitty sequel to this movie is it was so poorly received that they canceled the planned trilogy that they were going to make. And that one was going to be called Geddes v. Geddes, and it was going to be about a court case.
Oh boy.
How do you so blatantly like avoid naming your trilogy anything that connects to each other?
Well, Geddes is the last name of Jake.
Is Jake Geddes is the character.
They make irritating number of jokes because what's his old incest guy calls him like
John
Getz.
Houston.
Yeah, John Houston. Yeah. Calls him everything but his name like 100 times.
It's true.
Yeah.
Hey,
yeah.
How upsetting was watching John Huston eat fish?
Yeah, so there's a scene. He starts, and they're digging into a fish, and he goes, oh, they leave the head on. And I was like, oh, this is going to be a fucking nightmare.
Yes.
There's like a plastic stuffed animal eyeball.
It was really bad.
An actual fish eyeball.
Oh, it was terrible.
I feel like leaving the fish head on is like one of those like, free this character is a fucking psychopath yeah. like things.
Oh yeah.
Like
yeah.
Anytime you see like a man's butt, you don't see a man's butt unless that man is a serial killer. Period.
I can't think of a counter example. Yeah. Yeah.
Huh. Yeah. Interesting.
Mm-hmm. I'll have to do some research. Man butts.
Yeah. Maybe Gone Girl. Yeah.
Man butts come a not serial killer and the FBI comes a knocking.
That's the search string. That is the search string for that.
All right, so the real-life Chinatown was super successful, nominated for a bunch of Oscars.
Yeah, tons.
It's in the IMDb top 250.
Yeah, it's got like an 8.2.
It does.
It
is 8.2. It's way up there. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. What did you guys think of The Real Chinatown?
I really dislike this movie. Like it is, I think I said this to Zach earlier. It's not just problematic. It is a problem. Like
the existence of this movie is
the existence of this movie.
Made...
How really like disrespectful to everyone it is. And like
the
not
world
even
is a
in,
worse
like,
place for this movie existing.
Yeah. Really, like I feel like a worse person for having watched it.
I mean, so I agree. I tried to look past some of that stuff and just be like, which is not a good attitude, but like I was just like, yeah, it's the 70s, whatever. Even then,
okay.
Whew, it's still not a good movie. Like I've seen some movies from the 70s that outshine this by like a million. Like,
well, let's keep this train rolling. Star Wars.
Sure, yeah, of course.
Jaws.
I was saying earlier, I just watched Dog Day Afternoon. That movie's, like, genuinely good. Deer Hunter, yeah. I think, was in there. Like, fucking...
Well, Deer Hunter's fine.
It's long. It's good.
It's long.
Things
it's
happen.
So long.
I mean, honestly...
A third of it didn't need to be a wedding. I'll just say
well,
that.
Well, I think the same follows for this. Like, yeah, it's just a lot of boring. Yeah.
Lee, what did you think?
Yeah, I had remembered liking it, and I don't know in what world I would have enjoyed this movie, because I know what my taste in movies is.
Oh, so you had seen this before?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, okay.
Four.
Oh, yeah. I
just because
it's
very competently made.
It is. It is competent. It just is not good.
Right.
So I'd probably be in the 3-4 range also.
Yeah. Yeah, I'll go, like, a solid 4 as well. I think stylistically, like, it's a good-looking movie, but, like, as far as coherence, it's a nightmare. Yeah.
Okay, so what about Lucas's version?
I would...
Which I should say, he hit a bunch of major plot points.
Yeah,
for sure.
You, with no previous knowledge, I think, yeah, you did surprisingly well. Yeah.
My ending was totally backwards because I went with, like, hopeful progressive like oh the woman gets away with it she screwed him over. Nope, she does
super get shot in the face by a cop or the back of the head by a cop. Yeah,
yeah.
But,
it's yeah. true while trying to escape to Mexico with her daughter
sister.
Yeah, I would give, I think, Lucas, I give yours in the 7 range. I think I would add it to my film noir marathon if I were putting one together.
Sure.
All right.
Yeah, I'd say like a 6.7.
Yeah.
It's pretty solid.
If I hadn't forgotten the violence against women, how would that have
been? Oh. Well, I mean, it is period.
This is a really important thing you're about to say, Zach. I want you to stop
yeah.
for a second.
Hold on. Let me just really think this one over. I'd give it a 7 as well. I think, so, again, we were saying this earlier, but like the real movie had like a civics lesson for an hour. Like half of this movie is just like they go out into the spillways and they go, yeah, there's no fucking water here, and some guy's like, yeah, there is no fucking water. Like, it's bafflingly boring.
I mean, if you took that stuff and used it to pad out my, you know, 45 minute thing that
ooh,
I wrote,
but let's not
You'd have about the same movie.
I at least said it. Like, I think yours comes in at like a tight 89, 90 minutes. Mm-hmm. Like, let's just do that.
Yeah. Yours is not morally bankrupt and soul crushing in the way that Chinatown is.
Also, so. I mean, so the only twist in real Chinatown was like the incest part, and that's like an upsetting twist. But like your twists were like fun and good, I think, and there were more than one of them, so that was good. I think.
I thought the whole like point of noir was just twists, like I thought all of them end with like three at least.
You would think. I don't know.
I mean, there are noirs with lots of twists. I certainly a lot of the more famous ones have twists.
They may have tried for that here. I think it just fell flat, if anything.
One last note real quick. Did you guys think that the music at the end of Chinatown sounded like the beginning of Britney Spears' Oh Baby? Because I definitely did.
I just have to correct you real quick. It's Hit Me Baby.
Which thematically is perfect for this movie.
Hit Me Sister Baby Mother one more time.
Oh, God.
Okay, I didn't notice that, but I have since deleted it. I'm going to download it again and go on and check that for sure.
Yeah, let's just... Nobody pay to see Chinatown.
Oh, please don't. Also, next episode will open with a Britney Spears Chinatown remix, clearly. Mm-hmm. I will make that happen.
Are you going to make that? I feel like none of us have
the talent.
Have not the talent for that.
We've done four episodes. We have a lot of follow through.
Yeah.
We've banked a lot.
We're professionals.
Yeah, but like talking versus making like a music remix, I feel like that's different levels of
I don't
effort.
See the difference at all.
No, it's okay.
Yeah.
Okay. I will be horribly, horribly disappointed if you don't.
Yeah, that's fair.
All right. Well, I think that does it for us.
So the next movie is going to be TBA. Yep. We're still working on some scheduling issues.
We'll several planned. It's just a matter of when we can get people in the right places.
Yeah. So I guess with that, we'll... say goodbye.
Yeah. Seth's is still best, I think.
Was better. Yeah.
But Lucas is in a tight two right there.
All right. From all of us at Faking Movies.
My sister, my daughter.
Hey guys, Zach here again. We figured out our schedule. Next one should be 2001 classic Get Over It. But don't tell Seth. Should be a good one. See you next time. Bye.